Welcome to the Thomistic Institute podcast. Our mission is to promote the Catholic intellectual tradition in the university, the church, and the wider public square. The lectures on this podcast are organized by university students at Thomistic Institute chapters around the world. To learn more and to attend these events, visit us at thomisticinstitute.org.
The topic for today is the four levels of happiness. And I want to talk about different ways people conceive of happiness. And I'll talk about the hedonist, that'd be level one happiness. The egoist, that'd be level two happiness. The altruist, that'd be level three happiness. And the altruist of faith, that'd be level four happiness. And a quick summary of these levels of happiness is maybe evident from the words I just used. So the hedonist thinks of happiness as bodily pleasure. So eating food, sex, drinking alcohol, etc., all those would be ways that the hedonist would conceive of happiness. And then the egoist thinks of happiness in terms of power, money, fame, comparative goods. So if I'm an egoist, I will be happy if I get more power, more fame, more money than you do. And if I can move up the hierarchy, well, then I'm going to really be happy. The altruist thinks of happiness in terms of helping other people, loving other people, being a virtuous person. And finally, the altruist of faith thinks of happiness as loving other people, but also, and crucially, loving God even more than other people. So let's talk about these levels of happiness. Now, ideally, your levels of happiness could all go together. So for instance, tomorrow morning, I'm guessing you're going to eat breakfast. You're going to be hungry probably in the morning. So eat breakfast, you'll get some level one happiness. And that could be geared up to level two happiness. Maybe you want to achieve in your life somehow, and you think going on this intellectual retreat will be a way to get ahead, to look good on the resume or whatever. So you could gear up your level one to level two. But then your level two could also be geared to level three. How would that work? Well, let's say you want to make your resume really good so you can get into medical school. And the reason you care about getting into medical school is you really want to serve your patients and help your patients. You think health is an important good, so you're going to serve your patients by being a doctor. And then that could also be connected up to level four happiness. So you could want to serve your patients because maybe you think every single human being is made in God's image and likeness. So if I really help somebody else, I'm really serving God in helping somebody else. And I want to help people primarily in terms of their health, so I'm going to go into medicine and be a doctor. So these levels can all go together. Can. But they don't have to. Sometimes they come into conflict. So for instance, if you have a summer job, this is coming up summer, you're just going to the beach all summer. Okay, so you got a summer job. You're going to have to get out of bed in the morning, presumably for your summer job. And so when the alarm goes off at 6 a.m, you might be tempted to hit the snooze button. So in a case like that, your level one happiness, pleasure, comfort, sitting in bed, being warm and cozy, is in conflict with level two, making money, going to work, getting ahead in life or whatever. So you have to choose. And sometimes your level two happiness of competition, getting ahead, can get in the way of level three. So how would that work? Well, let's say you're working in a business where you're in sales and the customer asks you a question about the product you're selling and you lie to the customer because you want to get more sales because this is going to help you, etc. So in a case like that, level three, loving other people, being fair to them, etc., is getting in the way of level two, making a sale, getting more money for yourself. So these levels of happiness can come into conflict. So what I want to talk to you about today is how should we think about the relative value of each of these levels? First, let's start off with level one, the happiness of the hedonist. We should give the hedonist his due. There's something good about bodily pleasure. So what I mean is, for one thing, it's something that's very easy to get, right? Think about how difficult is it for you to get food? Hopefully not too difficult. Hopefully you have food 3 times a day. How difficult would it be for you to find drugs or alcohol or sex in San Francisco? What do you think? Super hard? Impossible? Mission impossible? Probably not. Right? Probably could find it pretty easily. So level one happiness, one of the big advantages is most of the time it's pretty easy to get. And level one happiness also is quite immediate. So think about the last time you were really hungry, right? You go in there, and as soon as you take your first bites of food, it's tasty right away, right? So you don't have to wait around. You don't have to, you know, eat a hamburger and wait like, well, 3 weeks later, was this a good hamburger? No, you know, right away. First bite, you know that it's really a tasty hamburger. So it's immediate. You get it right away. And those are huge advantages of level one happiness. But there are also some very significant disadvantages of level one happiness. And this is particularly true when level one happiness is sought in ways that are disorders. By what I mean by disordered is ways that harm other levels of happiness. So for instance, if we think about alcohol, I don't know if you've studied the effects of alcohol very much. If you guys ever heard of Andrew Huberman? Okay. This is your first homework assignment. I want you soon to go listen to his podcast about the effects of alcohol. And if you listen to that podcast, you're going to learn almost certainly a lot because it's about 2 hours and 10 minutes. So alcohol, he'll put out in this podcast, when overdone, is terrible for you. Terrible for you. I'm not talking about having a glass of wine with dinner or something, but, you know, overdoing alcohol. Very, very, very detrimental to your brain, to your sleep, to your executive function. It's basically very detrimental in multiple ways when you overdo it, when you abuse it. And this is true of all forms of abuse, you might say, of pleasure, seeking bodily pleasure in ways that are disordered. So the human body naturally seeks homeostasis. It's very hot outside, right? What happens to you when it's really hot? Right, you start to perspire. Why? Well, because you want your body wants to maintain a cool temperature. On the other hand, let's say it's freezing cold. What happens to your body then? Well, you might start to shiver. Why? Because your body's trying to warm yourself up. So your body naturally seeks homeostasis, right? A balance. Now, what happens if you overdo level one happiness? Well, you have tons of pleasure, but then what does your body do? Well, your body wants to help you get back to that balance, so you're going to have a huge hangover afterwards, right? So level one happiness is ultimately a kind of counterproductive way of seeking ultimate fulfillment. Plato talked about this centuries ago. Plato compared level one happiness to a leaky jar. So do we have some chalk here?
We do.
All right. So you've got the jar. I'm super great for all this. Just letting you know. And your level one is pouring it in and getting filled up.
That sounds good, huh?
The trouble, though, is that people build a tolerance very quickly. So, like, to use the alcohol example, you drink some alcohol, get filled up. Oh, I feel wonderful. It's great. But then, of course, you develop a tolerance for alcohol, your jar springs a leak. So to get the same level of satisfaction now, you need to have maybe 2, 3, 4 beers. Okay, now you got back up to the original level. But if you have 2, 3, 4 beers, well, you're going to start springing leaks even faster. And the more you put in, the more your body develops a resistance, a tolerance. It just is not thrilling. So to get or try to get a similar thrill, you got to do more and more and more and more. And ultimately, your body can't even take it, right? You can't take any more in your body and keep your body going. So bodily pleasure is something that seems as if it's going to really satisfy us. And it seems like it's going to really deliver on happiness. But it kind of is an illusion. Here's another way to think of it. Which human beings are satisfied and seek only level one happiness? There are really two kinds of human beings that seek only level one happiness. So one would be babies, right? Think about a newborn baby. A newborn baby doesn't care about money or power or fame or serving other people or loving God. All a newborn cares about is being comfortable, right? Getting fed, getting a new diaper, being warm, snuggy. That's it, right? And the other kind of human being that's satisfied with just level one happiness would be the hardcore addict, right? Somebody who's so addicted to, you know, whatever, that they'll do anything to get that substance. But outside of that, and certainly all of you are not obviously devoted solely to level one happiness, because you wouldn't be here, right? Obviously, I'm sure you can get more level one happiness than hearing me talk. As fun as that is,
It's not, there's other ways to get level one happiness that are more potent than just hearing me talk. So almost everyone that you know, and certainly you, are not just dedicated to level one, but are seeking also level two happiness. Now, level two has to do with competition and being better than others in some respect. So it could be being better than others in terms of money. It could be being better than others in terms of social media followers, right? You post something on Instagram or whatever, and you get tons of people liking it, commenting, and it's amazing. Well, you feel good. You post something, and you get just your mom likes it, and that's it. Totally not, well, you feel bad, right? So it's comparative, right? If you were some famous celebrity and you posted something, they might get more things than you've ever gotten in your whole life. And yet they would feel terrible about it because relative to where they are, they think, oh, I should get 100,000 people liking my photo or whatever. So it could be about power. It could be about fame, social media fame, etc. It could be about wealth. It could be about prestige. We compare ourselves to each other all the time. And that's just as we seek bodily pleasure all the time. It's very normal to do that, to say, well, do I go to a better school than this person? Am I more handsome than this person? Am I richer than this person, etc.? And level two happiness does have some advantages over level one happiness, right? One of the advantages is this. People recognize level two happiness winners. So if you are super wealthy, if you're the next Bill Gates or the next Elon Musk, and you have $10 billion or whatever, you are going to get a lot of praise and you're going to get honorary doctorates and awards and whatever. Level one, there's no societal recognition for that, at least at my school, maybe at your school. At your school, do they have a, you know, congratulations, Tom, you drank more beer than any undergraduate. You know, just wow, amazing. You know, do they?
Well, if you're transgender, yeah.
If you're transgender, they do. Yeah, okay. But, you know, they don't, there's no recognition for level one. Right. But for level two, there certainly is. Right. If you're a huge social media person, if you're, you know, a politician who's very powerful. And so a lot of people think, well, I am going to find my happiness by level two in some way. So let's take music. That's one way to try to achieve level two happiness. So what would be fantastic if you were seeking music and wanted to be great? Well, maybe if you had your own single that was super popular and you heard it on the radio. And you think, wow, man, I really made it. That's amazing. Or maybe not just one song, but a whole album, right? And it's on the radio and it's selling and it's on iTunes. And you're just like, wow, I'm so amazing. And people love your stuff and you sell out concerts. Well, do you guys know who is the artist who had the biggest selling record of all time? The person who's the very, 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 very top. Does anyone know?
Michael Jackson,
you're right. Michael Jackson's Thriller. So Michael Jackson's Thriller sold so many copies that if you added up the second place, which was AC/DC's Back in Black, and the third place, which is Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon, you put those together, Michael Jackson still has more. So Michael Jackson was number one by a mile. And you know what Michael Jackson said? He said, after Thriller, I spent the rest of my career trying to outdo Thriller. The idea that I'm getting at is this. Whatever level of achievement you get at level two, whether it's in music or politics or money or social media or whatever, you're going to get used to it. You're going to think, okay, yeah, I did that. I got that. And it's not going to have the same juice for you anymore. Some people do this in terms of possessions, right? They think, oh, if I just get this nice car, if I just have this nice house, if I just have a Rolex, if I have a whatever. And they think, if I just get this, then I'll be happy. And it is true. If you buy new things or someone gives you new things for a little while, you do feel happy. Mm-hmm. But just test yourself now. Think back to Christmas. Right? It's April now. Think back to Christmas. I'm guessing on Christmas morning when you open up gifts or whatever, you're like, this is amazing. I've got a new iPhone. I got a whatever you, it is you got. But this morning where you're like, oh, it's amazing. I have this iPhone. I'm so excited. I'm so happy. No. Right? You get used to it. It's just the way it is. So the same principle holds in every domain. Think about politics. Right? You may think, oh, I want to be student body president. That's going to be great. If I be so important. And then obviously you graduate from that. There's new things to go after. So you think, well, I want to be a mayor. That's pretty important. So maybe you can be a mayor of, let's say, Los Angeles. That's a pretty big city. That's pretty big. You're a big shot if you're a mayor of Los Angeles. But there's much bigger things than that, right? You could be governor of California. That's even better. And then the governor of California, it seems fairly obvious, he thinks to himself, well, if I could just become president of the United States, well, then, wow, I would really make it, right? But think about it. Even if you did get all the way to being president, do you think the president of the United States this morning jumped out of bed, did a little jig, and said, I'm president, I'm in the White House, woohoo, this is amazing, I'm so happy? No. He might have done that the first few days or something, but I'm sure he didn't get out of bed this morning and say, oh, I'm president, this is amazing, I'm so happy. We get used to it. We get used to whatever level of success we get. However high you go, you're just going to get used to it. And in addition to that, what's the likelihood that you're going to be president of the United States or that you're going to sell more records than Michael Jackson? What's the likelihood of doing something like that? You're just amazing. You're at the absolute top. Slim to none. It's extremely unlikely that your musical career is going to beat Michael Jackson's. It's extremely unlikely that you're going to be president of the United States. Not trying to put you down. It's just say the odds are against you, right? It's not an easy thing to do at all. So if you put your hopes and dreams and desires that, oh, I'm going to have level two and I'm going to be the best, I'm going to be better than other people, you're almost bound to fail. And most likely you'll fail way before reaching some big pinnacle, right? So you might be one of the best people in your college. And I hope you are. I hope you work really hard and become as diligent and intelligent and informed and studious as you can be. That's fantastic. But if you leave your college and you go to Harvard Law School, you know, 99% of people at Harvard Law School are not in the top 1% of Harvard Law School. So the higher you go, the harder it is to be in that 1% and to win. In our culture, many people think that having money is going to make them happy. Lots of money. And it is true that if you have very little money, if you don't eat three meals a day, if you don't have a place to sleep, if every night you're freezing cold because you don't have a blanket and stuff, getting the basics is going to make you considerably more happy. But what the research shows is that basically, once people get out of dire poverty and they have three meals a day and they have a place to sleep and they've got clothes to keep them warm, etc., that more money makes no significant difference for their happiness. It just doesn't make a difference. And I know this from my own experience. So when I was in graduate school at Notre Dame, at the end of graduate school, we had three kids and my wife was taking care of the kids. And so we had five people living on my income, which was $10,000 a year. So we were really poor, like super poor. And I remember I got my first job at Loyola New Orleans and my first job paid $36,000 a year. So almost four times as much as I was making, you know, as a graduate student. And I remember thinking, I am loaded. I am just like, so wealthy. I can go to the grocery store and just buy groceries and do whatever I want. And this is fill up the gas, taking the car. I thought I was just ultra wealthy for maybe 3 months. And then I got used to it. And then this, you know, this quadrupling my salary was like, yeah, I can go to the grocery store. I'm okay. You know, I just was totally used to it. Right. And that's true of every level of income. Every level of income. They ask people who make, you know, $80,000 a year, how much would you need to be comfortable? And they say, oh gosh, you know, I'm okay, but you know, to really be comfortable, I need to have 10 or 15% more. And then I'll be okay. Right? They talk to people who make $250,000 a year. How much would you need to be comfortable, sir? Oh, you know, I'm doing okay, but you know, to be comfortable, I really need about 10 or 15% more. Then I'd be comfortable, I think. It's true at every level of income. People always say the same thing. Oh, I'm okay, but I could really is 10, 15% more, then I'd be okay, right? So money is something you do need money to be happy, right? We have stomachs, we need to be fed, and unless someone's just giving you bread, you need some way to get your daily bread. So you do need some money, yeah. And money is a good. Why is money a good? Well, money is instrumentally good to help us get what we need to survive. Because again, we have bodies, we need some food. We have bodies that need to be clothed, right? You need money for gas, get around. You do need money. But the trouble for some people is they idolize money. And this is an enormous mistake. I remember when I was a kid, we had this kid's Bible, and it had a picture of the ancient Israelites worshiping a golden calf. And I remember as a kid, I was like 10 or whatever, I was like, this is ridiculous. Who would worship money? No one does this. Who worships a golden calf? This is completely insane. And then when I became an adult, I realized lots of people do this. Lots of people worship the golden calf. Now, they may not actually bow down in front of gold, but they do worship in the sense that they make this the most important thing in their life. And there are, unfortunately, many people who do that. It's called the vice of greed, a disordered love of money, where you love money so much that you neglect your family. You love money so much that you neglect your responsibilities to God. You love money so much that you'll lie to get it. You'll cheat to get it. You'll overwork so that your family never sees you because you're so busy at work making more money. All those are ways of worshiping money, right? Having greed, having a disordered love of money. And again, you need money. I'm not denying that. Yes, you do, especially if you have kids. If you're become a father or mother and you've got kids, you've got to feed your kids and get them clothes, and et cetera. The trouble isn't getting money. The trouble is excessive love of money, wanting money too much. So there's a famous study at Harvard about money, and it indicated a number of interesting things, but in a way you didn't need to do an academic study of this because many of these insights I've talked to you about are found earlier in the history of philosophy. So I don't know if you've ever read Boethius's Constellation of Philosophy. If you haven't read that, that's homework assignment number two. So you've got your Huberman thing on alcohol. Homework assignment number two is if you have not read Boethius's Constellation of Philosophy, please, please read it. It's a fantastic story. It's about a guy on death row. And he has fallen from the heights. He was basically like a prime minister of a country, like a super important person, secretary of state, you might think, in the United States. And the emperor thought he did something wrong, and the emperor threw him into prison. He's awaiting execution. And so he writes this philosophical and poetic dialogue about, you know, his situation. And one of the things he notes there is that it's possible to have your happiness destroyed when you put your happiness in the hands of fate. In other words, when you put your happiness in the hands of other people that you can't control. But that's exactly what happens when you try to make your social media your happiness, or your wealth your happiness, or power your happiness. All those things are ultimately not under your control, right? You can try to outdo Michael Jackson, but what if no one buys your records? Right? You can't make people buy your records. You can try to become president of the United States, but what if no one votes for you? Right? You can try to be a big social media person, influencer, but you make YouTube videos and you get 2 views and that's it. All that is to make your happiness outside of your control. But all these goods that we've been talking about, these level 2 sorts of goods, are all things that you can't really control. You can't really give yourself power or give yourself honor. You can hope people honor you, but you can't really make people honor you. You can't really make people give you money. So if you're going to have some control over your happiness, you ought not to put too much pressure on level 2. So what would be a better way to try to seek happiness? Right? Level 1 is insufficient. It's the kind of happiness that only a baby or a hardcore addict would be satisfied with. Well, here's another way to think of it, to go back to level 1 for a second. What if scientists were to connect, and they can do this, stimulate the part of your brain that experiences pleasure and say to you, okay, we're just going to stimulate this part of the brain and you'll be in a lab and we'll feed you through a tube in your stomach and you'll just sit in the box and we'll stimulate this pleasure center of your brain and just be there for the next 50 years. And no friends, no achievements, no love, no service of others, no nothing other than sitting in the box for 50 years. Now, would you want to do that? If you wouldn't want to do that, that indicates that even maximal amounts of bodily pleasure through the stimulation that the scientists do of that part of your brain isn't enough for you. And likewise, level 2 is the kind of happiness that you never get enough of it. Right? Think about money. Do you know any billionaires who are like, well, I have $1 billion now. I don't need any more money. Does Elon Musk like say, I'm the richest guy in the world, I'm done. I'm just going to not make money. No, he apparently works like 20 hours a day. Right? He's not satisfied. Do you think a president of the United States or a prime minister is satisfied with their amount of power, great as it is? No, they seem to work all the time to increase their power, get reelected, et cetera, et cetera. So these forms of happiness are in some ways problematic. So let's turn to this third level of happiness, the happiness of the altruist. Now, this has a huge advantage over level two, because loving other people is something you can do. It is in your control. You don't have to be at the hands of fickle fate, hoping that your product sells, hoping that you get elected, hoping that people like your social media, hoping for this and that. You can actually choose and make it happen that you love and serve other people. So that's a huge advantage over level two. It's also a huge advantage because it corresponds, I think, better with human nature. There's a famous study called the Grant Study. And the Grant Study started with people your age, college students. And it studied them all the way through their life for like 70 years. And they were looking at like what things made their lives, you know, meaningful and happy and what led to success and what didn't, etc. And after years of study, like 70 years, they went on the study. They only stopped when the oldest people ended up dying in the 90s and stuff. At the end of the study, the lead researcher was asked, well, what'd you learn, bottom line, from all this research? And he said, well, I can summarize it for you very simply. He says, happiness is love. Full stop. Happiness is love. Full stop. That was the summary of all this research. And what does that mean? Well, it could mean, and does mean for some people, finding a person to be your husband or your wife and having kids with them. Or it could mean, for some of you, finding love and finding a way to serve others in religious life. But the point is, if you don't have love in your life, you are going to be deeply unhappy. So even if you have tons of money, even if you have tons of fame, even if you have tons of bodily pleasure, you are not going to be happy. And we know this empirically. I'm from Los Angeles, right? So I know all about celebrities. And there are a gazillion celebrities who've had massive amounts of sex, massive amounts of drugs, massive amounts of alcohol, massively famous and wealthy and powerful in the movie industry or whatever. And yet, were so miserable that they ended up killing themselves. There's tons of examples of this. So we know for a fact that even getting mega doses of level one and level two does not, in fact, deliver on happiness. Right? And celebrities will tell you this. There's videos of them talking about how empty it feels to have, you know, all this stuff and not have any real friends. Not have anyone who really loves you for you. Because you have to think, if you're that kind of celebrity, maybe this person is only friends with me and only likes me because I'm famous or because they think I'll help them get into the movies or whatever. We need real love. We need real friendship. We need real bonds with other people. And again, that can happen in marriage. It can happen outside of marriage. But wherever you are in terms of your personal vocation, that is absolutely essential for us to be happy. Right. So you might say, well, what is love? Right. Loving relationships. What does that mean? Well, I'd say it means three things. It means first, having goodwill for the other person. You want and choose what's actually good for this person. Right. You want their health. You want them to have knowledge. You want them to have friends. You want them to have a flourishing life. And secondly, real love always involves appreciation. And that's why real love is always distinctive for each person. So if I love you, I love what is good about you, right? Maybe you're athletic. Well, I can love that about you. Maybe you're very smart and intellectual. I can love that about you. Maybe you're witty. Maybe you're good at fixing cars. Maybe you're good at jiu-jitsu. I don't know what you're good at exactly, but if I love you, I appreciate the reality of what's good about you. I can't love you as, oh, you're such a good Queen of England. You just do an amazing job. You're not the Queen of England. That's not real love at all. Because the Queen of England's not here.
You love people authentically when you appreciate the good that they actually really have. And that's going to vary from person to person. And then finally, love always involves seeking unity with the people you love in appropriate ways. And again, that's going to depend on your relationship, right? So I'm a father. And so when my kids were little, I sought unity with them through raising them, right? And then when they're a little older, unity with them through teaching them how to drive a car, right? Unity with them through helping them with their homework. And the idea is if you love someone and you care about them, you want to share activities with them. You want to do stuff with them. And that'll vary from person to person what those activities are. So level three is all about love. And level three really does transcend the limitations of level two and of level one. It is a superior form of happiness. And so some people think, well, all I need is level three. If I just have loving relationships with other people, really strong, good friendships, that is going to be enough for me to be truly happy. Or the Stoics thought, if I just become a person of true virtue, which for them would include having true friends, well, that's all I need to be truly happy. But I think Aquinas would agree with me that even level three happiness is insufficient, right? We want something more than just level three happiness, as good as it is. Now, what's wrong with level three happiness? Well, it's not really wrong. It's something, though, that's incomplete, right? Our hearts are not going to be satisfied, even with the very best of friends. Now, why is that? Well, part of it has to do with the nature of being a human being. We human beings have a mind that seeks after the truth, right? Aristotle talked about this at the beginning of the Metaphysics. He said, all men by nature desire to know. You notice how you're always asking questions. I'm sure from when you were, you know, 4-year-old kid, you're asking questions about this, questions about that. And you will continue to ask questions until the day you die. Our mind is naturally restless, seeking after knowledge and insight and greater truth. But as beautiful as any human relationship can be, and as instructive as any human relationship can be, there is no human being who can really give you the fullness of truth. And we want in relationships, we seek goodness. And it's true that people can be really good. You can have friends that are so admirable and wonderful and so good. But the fact is, Alexander Solzhenitsyn was right, that everyone who is on earth now is a mixture of good and bad, right? He said the dividing line between good and evil runs down every human heart. So everyone that you meet here on earth is going to be a mixture, hopefully some virtues, but some weaknesses, some flaws, some imperfections. But our will naturally seeks what is good and seeks what's perfectly good. But we can't find that in any human being here on earth. And then finally, we seek, of course, love, right? We want someone to love us and have goodwill for us, to appreciate us and to know us and to be unified with us. But no human being can do that perfectly, right? No human being perfectly wills our good at all times. Even the most loving marital couples have fights sometimes and say or do the wrong thing. And no human being can know fully the good that is inside each one of us. And no human being can be perfectly united with us. Only God can do that, right? Only God has perfect goodness of will towards us, wanting nothing but our good all the time. Only God is perfectly good, such that there is no dividing line in God, that God's partly good and partly evil. No, if you've read your Aquinas, you know God is not composed. Why? Well, everything that's composed requires a composer. God couldn't be the first cause. If there was something prior to God putting God together, like the people in the automobile factory putting together a car, well, no, God is not composed. Or to put it differently, God is simple. And God alone can fully appreciate the good in us. Why? Because God alone is the creator. And in creating you, God knows you better than you know yourself. Think about this. You don't remember yourself as a baby. God knew you as a baby. God knew you in the womb.
God knows you as an old man or an old woman, 97 years old in the nursing home. God knows you now perfectly. He knows whether you have an even or odd number of eyelashes. He knows you way better than you know yourself. He knows all the good deeds you've done in your entire life, most of which you've totally forgotten. And he appreciates every single good thing you've ever done in your entire life and that you will do in your entire life. So God loves you in terms of unity also. Only God can be perfectly unified with us. Why? Well, only God is always available to love us and to interact with us and to relate to us. Even your best friend, if you get married, even your spouse is not always awake at 2 a.m, not always available and ready to talk and ready to listen. God is. So the love of God transcends the love that any human being can give you. And if you hope that some human being is going to give you love, maybe your husband or a wife, and oh, if I have this person, I will feel perfectly loved, you are going to be disappointed. No human being can love you with perfect love because no human being is perfect. No human relationship is perfect because you have two imperfect people in the relationship. So you're going to be disappointed and your expectations will be thwarted if you imagine perfection. It's not going to happen. And perfection, frankly, isn't going to happen even if you get level 4 happiness here on earth. Why? Because as long as we're here on earth, our happiness is always going to be subject to all kinds of setbacks and weaknesses. You get sick, all kinds of things. And that's why it's very good news that we cannot have perfect happiness here on earth. It makes you much more happy. Because if you think about it, one way to make yourself much less happy is to have unrealistic expectations. To think, oh, I'm going to have a perfect life, perfect happiness, and you'll always be disappointed because you're never going to reach that perfection. Perfection is reserved for the life to come when our love for God is perfected, when our understanding of God is perfected, when our love for God is perfected, when we have a perfect and perfected relationship with God. Then, and then alone, will our happiness be perfect. So as long as we're here on earth, our life is always going to be a mixture. We're going to have some joyful things happen to us, some sorrowful things happen to us, maybe some glorious things happen to us. It's going to be a mixture. And in fact, even one day can be a kind of mixture. This was good, this was bad. But we're not going to have that perfect happiness till the life to come. So the bottom line is that Augustine was right. Our hearts are restless until they rest in God. We can't find perfect happiness outside of God. But we can find not perfect happiness, but imperfect happiness here below. We can have legitimate, real, true human happiness. It's not perfect, but very good here below. How? Well, by not making an idol out of level 1 happiness, by having our desires for food, drink, sex, etc., under control, right? And that is a struggle for everybody, right? It's a struggle for everybody. But I encourage you to do whatever you need to do to get those things under control. Because otherwise, you're going to ruin your own happiness here below and also probably harm lots of other people. And not to make an idol out of level 2 happiness. It's fine to get power. Maybe someone here will become a president, a senator, or whatever. That's fine. You can do a lot of good for people. The trouble is not having power. The trouble is making an idol out of power. Trouble is not having money. It's making an idol out of money. Trouble's not having a big social media following. Great. You're on social media and your YouTube things are going off. It's wonderful. Trouble's not with that. It's idolizing that, making that more important than loving God and loving neighbor. So it brings us to a conclusion, the 4 levels of happiness. One thing that you can do, and I'll leave you with this, is each day try to make some progress in terms of achieving real happiness. So let me just give a little tip for this. With level 1, every day you can show yourself that you're not just a hedonist. And how do you do that? By every day deliberately rejecting some legitimate form of pleasure. So here's an example. Maybe you like to have butter on your bread. And you say, you know what? I'm just going to do without that. No butter on my bread. Or you like to put salt on your fries. I'm just going to do without that. Or maybe at the end of your shower, you turn it on cold for a minute. Wake yourself up. You can look at Andrew Huberman on that. It said cold plunge. This is all the rage now. So you can be ahead of the curve with the latest trend of cold plunges. But the point is just to act against, to curb yourself against what is more typical, an overinclination to bodily pleasure. Likewise with level two, you can deliberately give away some of your money to charity to try to curb excessive desire for that. With level three, this need not get in the way of level four, because you could have a real friendship that's grounded in level four ultimately. I guess the little tip I'd suggest there is make time, especially for your friends and family. So think about your parents, and maybe for some of you, your grandparents are alive. If your grandparents are alive, it's highly likely that they're lonely and that they would love to have more contact and interaction with you. It would make their day, I guarantee it, if you called them, right? And you can make a habit of this. You can call them every Sunday. You're like, I'm going to call grandma every Sunday. She's a widow, very lonely, and I'm going to go call her, or maybe better yet, visit her, go have lunch with her. This would make an enormous positive difference for her. You can really make her life a lot better, right? And then every day, some level four. There's lots of ways to get level four. I'm sure you can talk to a priest about this, but here's something I do that I think is really helpful for me. And you can try this yourself if you want. You can write a letter to God. Write a letter to Jesus, right? And it can be about whatever you want, thanking him for things that are happening, asking him for help, relating to him. And I find when I write a letter, it helps me to focus more easily than if I just am just sitting there kind of talking to God in my head or something. Because maybe you and I are different, but when I pray, very often I start praying, hey, God, you know, here I am. I love you. I'm worried about my kids. I'm worried about this or whatever. And then pretty soon I'm thinking about, oh, I got to do this at work. I got to send the email. And I'm just distracted. And somehow I find if I write, I'm just much less distracted. Like, I just focuses me, and I can just stay on target, stay on track. For me, a lot easier. So if you've never tried that way of praying, you could give it a shot. Write a letter to God and tell God whatever you want. And you can tell God the raw truth about your life. And it may not be pretty. It's not always pretty in my life. So if I ever write a letter to God in which there are things that I don't want anyone to see, you know what I do? I take the letter and I rip it up into little tiny pieces and I put it into a ball and I go to the toilet and I flush the toilet and it's gone. No one reads it. So when you're communicating with God in this way, you can be 100% honest. Whatever terrible thing you did, or whatever terrible thoughts you're having, or however terrible, whatever, get it all out of yourself. Give it all over to God. And then again, I understand you want your privacy. Fair enough. Just rip that baby up into little tiny pieces, set it on fire, flush it down the toilet, bury it in the backyard. Although maybe that's not so good because the dog might unbury it and someone sticks it together. So better to burn it or flush it in the toilet. But anyway, so those are some little suggestions that have helped me at least to find greater happiness. So thank you very much. Any questions?
Thanks for listening to this lecture on the Thomistic Institute podcast. The generosity of people like you makes this podcast possible. If you enjoy these talks, please consider showing your support at www.thomisticinstitute.org/donate. Your donation of even a dollar helps us reach more college students and many others with the powerful truths of the faith, and it ensures that we can keep publishing top-notch lectures on this podcast. Thanks a lot.